Good morning. I would try some Hungarian, but last night at dinner, when I was trying to learn cheers, I made a pretty big mistake at dinner. So I'm gonna avoid trying Hungarian. Think about that, and you guys will probably get the joke there. Very excited to be here. My name is Aaron Kelly, and I run the product marketing team for SQL Server and the Data Platform. It's great to be here to talk about our technology. And where we're going with SQL Server and the rest of the platform. But first, one of the things I wanted to set some context, and it's really context for the whole day, which is highlight our vision for the Cloud OS. And when we talk about the Cloud OS, we're talking about not just the core operating system, but the data platform as well. And we think it's important that customers are able to deliver their infrastructure in their own environment, in a public cloud, or in a hoster cloud, and that's the vision of the Cloud OS. And there's four core scenarios that we're driving towards and helping enable customers to implement. One, of course, is transforming your data center so you can get more efficiency out of your existing infrastructure and take advantage of scaling up into the cloud. There's unlocking insights on all your data, which we'll spend quite a bit of time today talking about in this track. Empowering each individual in your organization to have access to the right data and information that they need. We call that people-centric IT. And then finally, helping you build modern applications that allow you to scale your business and take advantage of some of the new trends, again, in leveraging the cloud for more scalability. And we do this by creating a consistent environment that you can run on-premises, where you have consistent deployment, management, identity, a consistent data platform across these three deployment models, and then, of course, leveraging virtualization to bring it all together. So that's the Cloud OS. Again, the goal is to give you flexibility in how you run and manage your infrastructure. But let's dive into the data platform. And back at Redmond, as we were looking at what are the key design points for the next version of SQL Server, there were three big trends that we rallied around. The first, of course, is the radical drop in cost of memory technology. So as memory costs have gone down, the ability to create in-memory solutions that give you much higher performance have become far more viable. I think the second big trend, of course, is the rise of the cloud. Both for consumer and enterprise applications, the cloud is becoming a great way to deliver high-scale applications in a very broad way around the world. And then finally, there's just been this explosion of data. And it's not just a growth of, say, traditional data in a line of business application or in a data warehouse, but it's also new kinds of data that people want to glean insights from. So unstructured data that's being created from the social sphere, like Twitter or Facebook feeds, data coming off of test equipment or telemetry that you may have in various environments in your organization or with a partner, as well as external data. So more and more customers are looking to bring external data into their environment, match it up with data they run locally or have locally to create deeper insights. Because ultimately, what people want is to make better decisions. Everyone in this room and everyone in your companies or schools or in government needs to make decisions every day. And if you have data, you're more likely to make better decisions. And that's really the goal, is how do we unlock insights from this large amount of data that's being created. Now, we've gone through quite an evolution over the last couple of years with SQL Server. If you think back to SQL 2000, for those of you that maybe may have used that, we were very excited about having XML support in the product. And it's evolved quite a bit. So just a quick show of hands, how many people today are running SQL Server 2008? How about 2008 R2? Good. SQL 2012, how many 2012? Very good. Okay, great. And then has anyone had a chance to start to use SQL Server 2014 in the CTP1 or CTP2? Anyone yet? Okay, there's maybe one or two up there. Great. Well, today we'll do some demonstrations of SQL 2014, so you'll be able to take a look. What I would highlight here, though, on this timeline is a couple of key trends. One, if you look at 2008 R2, That was the first time we started to introduce in-memory technology. And you'll see me talk about this quite a bit because it does give just tremendous performance benefits without having to move to, say, new hardware. And so that's very, very powerful. And that started with PowerPivot around analytics, both running in Excel as well as running in analysis services. If you look at 2012, Always On was really one of the key investments that allowed SQL Server to really meet those mission-critical scenarios for high availability. And then, of course, the column store index represented in-memory technology for data warehousing scenarios. Now, as we move to SQL Server 2014, what's great about that is we've completed our in-memory investments to address all three of the core workloads of SQL Server. So in-memory for BI and analytics, in-memory for data warehousing, and then in-memory for classic OLTP. And I'll show you a demonstration of that here in a few minutes. Hybrid has also been a big investment in support of the CloudOS vision and to give you the flexibility of running your data platform in your own environment or in the public cloud. We've made a lot of investments in SQL Server 2014 that really brings the cloud to you through SQL Server Management Studio. Very, very powerful ways of taking advantage of the cloud. And then just last week, we announced the general availability of our service, HD Insight, which allows you to use Hadoop now in Windows Azure. And for those of you that are starting to look at Hadoop, it's a very powerful way of managing and getting insights from unstructured data. And you'll see some of that throughout the track today as part of these demonstrations. So this is the evolution of the platform. We're very excited about moving forward now aggressively towards better performance and hybrid scenarios that leverage the cloud. Okay, so as I look at the data platform, there's really three ways of organizing or talking about it. The first is around mission-critical performance. The next is around getting insights from your data. And then finally, it's about delivering this platform in a hybrid environment. Run it in your environment or run it in the public cloud or run it in a hoster cloud. That's the vision. So we're going to go through this during my session. So let's start with mission-critical performance. And there's four core areas here. I'm not going to go into detail on all of them this morning because I don't have time. But I do want to spend quite a bit of time talking about our in-memory investments in SQL 2014. I do want to talk about some of the scalability investments that we've made so you can really get some enhancements in scaling up SQL Server. High availability, of course, is a critical area. And then support. We've got great support offerings both from Microsoft and from our partners that really allow you to deliver a mission-critical solution. So let's start with in-memory. And as I mentioned before, we've really rounded out our in-memory technologies with SQL Server 2014. So we've had in-memory in BI and analytics. We had in-memory as part of data warehousing in SQL 2012. But we've added in-memory for a classic OLTP solution here in 2014. And this investment is very, very unique in the industry. And it gives you tremendous performance gains on your classic line of business application without having to swap out and bring in new hardware that has, say, high amounts of RAM. And the way the technology works for OLTP is we've changed several things. For one, you get a performance gain by identifying which tables within your database are running hot. So which ones are the bottlenecks in your environment? You can then take those tables and move them in memory. Well, there's immediate benefit of that in that you're now accessing that data on RAM as opposed to disk, so that's going to give you performance gain. Now, the second thing we do to improve performance is we actually change the data structure, and in doing so, we eliminate latching. Now, in a classic disk-based database, all the data is arranged in rows on a page. And as a particular process wants to read or access data in a row, it'll latch the page, it'll do its read, unlatch the page, and move on. Well, a second process that may want to get access to data on that same page has to wait. This is typically referred to as latching. Well, with SQL Server 2014 and our in-memory OLTP engine, we actually store the data in rows. And by storing the data in individual rows, it allows each process to grab a row individually and start to, you know, read or write accordingly, which eliminates latching and allows the CPU to run much faster and perform at a much higher rate. And I'll show you that here in a second in a demonstration. Now, the third thing we do to improve performance in our in-memory OLTP engine is we actually take the stored procedures and we compile them down to machine code. And this increases performance dramatically, especially if you have more elaborate stored procedures that you're using with SQL Server. And so three really powerful ways of accelerating performance for the tables that are bottlenecks and for the stored procedures that may be more advanced or more complicated. And as you can see here in this customer example, Bwin, which is a European online gaming company, saw huge benefits as they moved from SQL Server 2008 to SQL Server 2014 using the in-memory OLTP engine. You can see here 16 times faster performance using the same hardware. So very, very powerful solution. But rather than talk about it with a slide, let's go ahead and do a demonstration, shall we? Sound good? Good. All right. All right. So what I have here is, let me just close this so you can see it better. What I have here is a simple application that's simulating transactions in a typical OLTP environment. And so if I go ahead and start the solution, you can start to see the number of transactions per second. I'm running this right here on this laptop. And so you see about 1,000 or so transactions a second, which is pretty good. If I show the details here, what you can see, though, is you can see the impact of latching. So as I mentioned before, you've got processes latching that page, doing their read or write, and then unlatching the page. And what ends up happening is you've got a lot of latching, and then the CPU has to wait for each of these processes to stop latching. So let's see if we can improve the performance. So I'm going to go ahead and stop that. I'm going to go into SQL Server Management Studio for 2014. And you can, what a great screen. You can really see that. And what I can do is I can go to this database here, and I can run some reports that allow me to better understand how I can improve my performance using the in-memory engine. So I'm going to start here, and I'm going to take a look at the various tables in my database and see which ones are best moved into an in-memory solution. And you can see there in the top right, ticket reservation detail, which is one of the key tables as part of this ticketing application, could really benefit from moving into in-memory. So let's go ahead and do that. So I'll come back to my application. I'm going to go ahead and migrate that table over into, click again. Yeah. Migrate that table into in-memory. And so I've migrated the table in-memory. I've also changed the data structure from a classic row data structure in a table, in a page rather, into individual rows stored in the in-memory engine. And let me go ahead and start that, and we'll start the application back up using the in-memory engine. Take a second to fire up. And you can see immediately I'm getting 6 to 10x performance gain, and there's no latching. And so again, by moving from a page storage model to individual rows, I've eliminated the latching and improved performance. Hey, which is pretty good. 5x improvement, 6x improvement without on the same exact hardware, that's a pretty powerful. But we can do more. And so let me go back here to SQL Server Management Studio and looked at the stored procedure analysis. So if I click on here, what SQL Server 2014 has done as well is it's analyzed the various stored procedures that are running in this application and identified which stored procedures would be better off compiled down to machine code. So I can see those stored procedures there. Let me go back to my application. Let me go ahead and migrate those stored procedures over into and compile them as machine code. And let me run the application again. And now you can see huge performance gains, 25x improvement in performance by migrating those stored procedures. So really very powerful and a great new investment in SQL Server 2014, which allows you, with your same hardware, to take advantage of this in-memory technology. So pretty cool stuff, huh? Yeah? Okay. It's early. We need more coffee. So that's SQL Server 2014 and some of the in-memory technology, which I really encourage you to take a look at the CTP2, which is our new customer technical preview. It's ready to go. It's ready to go in production, and you can start to use it in your environment and see these kinds of performance gains on your classic OLTP application. Okay, so let's keep going. I want to talk a little bit about some of the new investments we've made in scale with SQL Server 2014. So one of the great benefits of having the Windows Server team and the SQL Server team in the same organization is we get to work together on core scenarios. And of course, scale is an important one for any database, but it's also very important for Windows Server and the operating system. And so as Windows Server has scaled up to handle much, much larger VMs, where like you have 640 logical processors and a terabyte of memory per VM, SQL Server, which as a database is a very hungry workload, can take advantage of that huge amount of scale. We can also take advantage of the virtual networking investments that Windows Server has made. And then what's really exciting is in Windows Server 2012 R2, they've made investments in virtualizing storage. And this is a great way to save money in your environment by moving away from expensive SANs and taking advantage of these new storage capabilities. And what Windows Server allows you to do is decide which data will run on disks, so you can put colder data on disk, and which data you'd want to run on an SSD. And that complements SQL Server 2014, because in 2014, the resource governor now allows you to also control or resource allocate I/O. So historically in SQL Server, you were able to control CPU and memory using the resource governor. So certain applications can get a little bit more CPU or a little bit more RAM as part of those processes. With SQL Server 2014, we also allow you to control or allocate I/O for particular applications or processes. So now, if you start to think about that, if you use Windows Server 2012 R2 to control which data goes onto SSDs for higher performance versus spinning disks, then SQL Server 2014 on top of that can control memory, CPU, and I/O. You can now really allocate your hotter databases to SSDs for faster performance. You can have your colder data running on disk, and it allows you to really focus and improve the overall scale and performance of your application without having to go out and buy, you know, big new servers. And so very, very important investment as part of SQL Server 2014. High availability has also been a key area of focus for us. And with SQL Server 2012 and the introduction of the always-on availability groups, we really moved forward pretty significantly in high availability disaster recovery type performance. And we've continued to make investments with the latest release of SQL Server 2014, where now you can move up to 8 secondaries as part of your always-on availability groups and have a much higher overall performance. And you can see from the diagram basically how the always-on availability groups works. It basically allows you to identify the AG listener is like an IP address for the availability group. Your application points to that IP address, and it's typically going to be doing reads and writes from that primary server. But that primary server will stay in sync with up to 8 secondaries. In this particular diagram, I'm showing one secondary database that's being then written to backup, so just kind of a classic backup. Another secondary is being used for BI scenarios, so people are running BI reports off that second server. And so the primary server can handle the load and keep the performance high. These backup servers can be used for high availability as well as running other scenarios like BI or just kind of classic backup. And so this is a big part of the investment we've made in 2012. And for those of you that aren't in 2012 yet, the high availability, always-on availability groups are a big part of that. And then with 2014, we've continued to move that forward. So a lot of investments around high availability. And those investments have really helped us make a lot of progress with large enterprise customers. And this is just an example of some of the customers who, based on these investments in Mission Critical, have been moving away from Oracle towards SQL Server to save a lot of money. And you can see this across many, many different industries. And it's we've started to really build a lot of momentum. The business is growing. We're seeing revenue growth, and we're seeing usage share shift towards SQL Server because of these investments in mission critical. So that's the mission critical area. I think to highlight what's really new in SQL Server 2014, it is those in-memory investments that can give you just incredible performance gains in your solution. All right, so now let's shift gears and let's start to talk about business intelligence and unlocking insights from your data. And as we think about BI and insights, there's really three core areas where we've made investments. One, we've made it much easier for everyone to get access to the data that they need to do analysis. In many cases, this is the most important step or the most difficult step. How do I get the data that I need to do my analysis? Now, once you have that data, you want to have an environment that's familiar to your users so that they can do that analysis and come up with those insights. And then, of course, once you have those insights, how do I operationalize or deploy this using a complete platform? These are key investment areas that we've made. So let me start with a customer example just to sort of see this in action. And it's an ISV in the UK named Ascribe. And Ascribe is in the healthcare space. And one of the big challenges in healthcare, of course, is this. Can you see that down there? Does this look familiar to those of you? Anyone here in healthcare? There's a few folks. So a lot of the data in healthcare is unstructured. It's handwritten notes. That's a prescription written by a doctor. I can't read it. I think it's in English. So this was the challenge. How do we take advantage of the amount of unstructured data that's available and do analysis on it? And in particular, they were looking at identifying infectious disease outbreaks in the UK. Now, what Ascribe had to date is they had a line of business application in the provider space. And so a hospital would have an application. When you would go see the doctor would enter information into that application about maybe a particular disease you might have had. And that was helpful. But the challenge they were seeing, especially in emergency rooms, was these handwritten notes. So you come into the emergency room, the orderly quickly writes down your symptoms, and you move on through the process of being checked in. Well, what they wanted to do is they wanted to take those handwritten notes and do analytics on those as well to see if they could identify, based on the symptoms you had, whether or not there was an outbreak of some infectious disease. And so they took the data, they created a Windows 8 tablet application so the emergency workers can write, just handwrite on the application. They then push that data up into Windows Azure, and they use natural language processing and some analytics solutions running on Hadoop up in Windows Azure to process those handwritten notes, determine the symptoms, figure out what's the likelihood that those symptoms correspond to a particular disease, and then they push that data both to a national data mart that the National Health Service can look across multiple hospitals and see trends, as well as push it back down to the doctors in the hospital in which you where you arrived. And now they can compare actual people that have been diagnosed with a certain disease from the line of business app, as well as take a look at symptoms of people entering into the ER. And they can compare those things. And you can do the analysis in a tool that's very familiar to all the users, both at the national level and the local level, in Excel. And as I'll show you in a second, the ability to now map data points in Excel onto an actual map is a very, very powerful way for them to track both actual diagnoses as well as symptoms of various patients as they're coming in the hospital. So very, very cool solution that takes advantage of the full platform. Well, how do you build something like this? Well, for starters, you've got to make it easy to go connect and bring that data in, be it from an on-premise application or, say, a Hadoop cluster running up in the cloud. Bringing that data in, combining it, and managing it is very important because then you want it so that you can do analysis. And I'm going to show you some of these features here during my session, and you'll see it throughout the day. One of the really neat ones is called Power Query, and it does allow you to go search online data and connect to data sources in the cloud. Very, very powerful. Bring it in, combine it, both structured and unstructured data to start driving your analysis. Now, once you have the data in a tool like Excel, you want to be able to use the analytics visualization tools that are there. So being able to create Power View maps that allow you to, you know, spin and dice and slice the different data to do analysis. Mapping this data on a 3D map to see geographical relationships between different types of data sets. And then collaborating and with those workbooks or that analysis. One of the great elements of the overall solution is the ability to use something like SharePoint to share the analysis both in the browser and those workbooks. And so users can collaborate on the analysis and really see it scale. So a big part of that investment. And so one of the new services from Microsoft is called Power BI, and it brings together the best of Excel, SharePoint, and SQL Server into an integrated BI solution. We're taking advantage of the fact that there's over a billion users who have Excel today. So they're familiar with Excel. It's a tool that they know. We're making Excel far more powerful than you've seen before to help address these BI scenarios. And then we're complementing Excel with a back-end cloud solution that allows you to share this information, connect to it, find new ways of interacting with the data. There's a great new feature, which I'll show you here in a second. It's called Q&A, so for question and answer. And you actually have the ability to ask the data a question and get answers back in the form of visualization. So very, very cool technology that I'll show you in a second. And then, of course, mobility. Being able to deliver these solutions on, say, tablets or slates so that users on the go can interact and manage their data. So Power BI for Office 365 is a new service that brings this all together. And it's in preview right now, and we're very excited about the momentum we're seeing there. And with that, rather than talk about it, let me go ahead and give you a demonstration of some of our BI tools. Okay, so let's shift gears again. We'll close that guy out. Close out SQL Server. Okay, so here we are in Excel. And the scenario I want to highlight for you is some work that we've been doing with a partner in the city of Barcelona. So in Barcelona, one of the things that they have, or one of the programs, is called bicing. And it's not biking, it's bicing. So that spelling up there is correct on the spreadsheet, you can see. And what bicing is basically they have various bicycles around the city that are in a kiosk. And if you want to use the bike, you can check out the bike, you can ride it around the city, and you check it back in into a different location. So it's a very cool way for people in Barcelona to get around the city. And there's other cities that have a similar program. I know there's in New York City, Paris, there's other cities around the world. And so one of the scenarios that they were looking at is how do we, one, keep track of where the various bicycles are and you know how many bicycles are in different stations. So I want to compare where bikes are today, where am I out of bikes, where do I have too many bikes, etc. But they were also doing a lot of analysis on social sentiment in the city. In particular, collecting a lot of Twitter feeds from around the city, mapping those Twitter feeds to different locations to try to understand the sentiment of citizens at various points in the city. And so let me show you kind of a demonstration of some of that. Well, what I want to do is start with Excel here. And you can see I've got Power Query, which is a great new feature in Excel. And with Power Query, I can connect to all kinds of things. I can connect to data from a file, from various databases, Oracle, IBM, MySQL, et cetera. I can connect to all kinds of other data scenarios like HT Insights in Windows Azure, so connect to Hadoop in the cloud or connect to Hadoop on-premises. I can go to a marketplace and buy data and bring it in. So very, very powerful. But probably the coolest feature is this ability to do an online search. And so if I click on the search button here and I do a search for bicing in Barcelona, what I'm able to do now is search both a public data catalog as well as a private data catalog within my organization. And what you see that's come up here is some various examples. So if I hover over this one, I'm getting a preview of data that's in Wikipedia. And so what we've done is we've gone out and we've indexed all the data tables on Wikipedia. We've brought them into this public data catalog, and it's now searchable from Excel. So very, very cool. What I also have here, though, is some actual data from Barcelona that's in my private tenant or my Microsoft tenant. So someone had prepared this data, pulled it from a line of business application, and it's very discoverable. And you can see the difference here. The W represents Wikipedia, and this little star symbol represents data from our company catalog, if you will. So I can just click on that and pull the data right into Excel. And what this is showing me here is what the different bike stations around the city, the latitude and longitude, the street, etc. And what it also has on here is the number of bikes available at a given station, what's the capacity of that station is, etc. So that's kind of helpful for me to understand where are my bikes right now, where do I have some empty slots. But what I also want to do is go out and find some social sentiment. So if I go here into Power Query again, and let me go connect now to Windows Azure and HD Insight. So this is our Hadoop offering that's part of Windows Azure. So if I go and click there, I can connect to my server up in HD Insight. And now from Power Query, I'm connecting to Windows Azure, and I'm connecting to my Hadoop solution up there. I can then click and find the different data sets that are there. And in this case, what we've done is we've put all the tweets for the same time period in the city. We've run a MapReduce job over those tweets to organize them and put a little structure around them. And so now you can see here the tweet ID. You can see the tweet itself there in Spanish. You can see the street name, some of the locations. And we've done some analysis to figure out how close to which station are some of these various tweets. So I can go ahead and say, yeah, that looks good. Go click Done. And I'm pulling this data down now from Windows Azure right into Excel. You can see it loading there right off of my Hadoop cluster. And so that's going to take a second or two to pull down that data. And then once it comes down, what I can start to do is I want to merge these data sets. So I want to combine the data from my line of business solution that said where are the bikes available with this social sentiment data. So all I need to do here is click on Merge. Let me grab my Twitter sentiments. Let me grab the Bicing in Barcelona data. I want to find the column that will make the connection. So I'm going to use this near station column and station ID. And I go ahead and do that merge. So this is like doing a join in database. Let me pull in all these columns that I want. And now go ahead and click Done. And now what I've done is I've merged this data together, data on Hadoop that showed sentiment, data from my line of business system that I pulled down using Power Query, and then I've merged this data together. It's pulling it down, it's merging it, and now I've got a merged view. And that's interesting. It's interesting to have the data in this form, but I'd much rather have a visualization. So now what I want to do is I'm going to launch another new feature of Excel called Power Map. And when I launch Power Map, I'm now able to do some 3D visualizations over this data. So there you can see the data right there. You can see we're here in Europe, so this is Barcelona. So I can zoom in to the data. And what I'm seeing here is I'm seeing the various locations of the bike stations in Barcelona. So interesting, I can see where the stations are, but let me add some data. So I'm going to go ahead here and click on Bikes Available. And now I can see where the bikes are available. I can add the street name. And so I can start to see where there are bikes available and where there are not bikes available. And as you'll notice here, there's a lot of bikes available here over near the water. So people are riding their bikes towards the water. And here in the heart of the city, there's much fewer bikes available. And for those of you that don't know Barcelona very well, I can add this map label here. And so you can see the street names. And what this is using is it's using Bing. So it's using the Bing API to map this data and pull it right into Excel. So a very, very cool way for users to interact. But let me add a little bit more to it. So let's bring in that social sentiment. And so if I go over here and I add a layer, I'm going to add a new layer to the data. And so I go to my Twitter sentiments. Let me grab latitude and longitude so I can map that data based on latitude and longitude. What I also want to do is rather than looking at it as column, I want to look at that sentiment data as a heat map. And let's take a look at the negative tweets first, okay? So we're looking at the negative tweets. Let's zoom back in here into Barcelona. And we can see kind of an interesting correlation now between where there's a lot of negative tweets and where there aren't very many bicycles available. So that was a pretty cool way of seeing the data together as a visualization. And just to sort of validate that, let me switch from negative tweets on that heat map to positive tweets. And again, you can see that there's a lot more positive tweets near where there's bikes available, near the water, versus at the heart of the city. So very, very powerful way of bringing together data from two different sources, merging them in Excel, and then doing a really powerful visualization using Power Map. So pretty new stuff. How many people have seen these kinds of tools in Excel, have played with them yet? Just a couple. Great. So I really encourage you to start to take a look at this new tool. It's very, very powerful stuff. But I'm not done yet, because one of the things I wanted to also show is this great new technology called Q&A. And as part of the Power BI solution, Q&A is basically an early investment in how do we bring data and analytics to everyone. Okay, so what I did in Excel, that was pretty simple, but not every employee in your company is really good at manipulating data in that way in Excel. So how do we make it even easier? And so Q&A is an example of this. And so what I'm doing now is I have that same data model, and now I want to start asking the data questions. So how about I say total bikes available, and just like that, I get an answer. And so it says, hey, there's 3,000 bikes available across those various stations. But let me look at that, say, by street. And what comes up is a visualization. So Q&A says, I think you're trying to do a comparison of different data points. I'm going to give you a bar chart as a way of analyzing that data. So just by asking a question, I get an answer. Now, I might want to do a comparison. So like total bikes available versus total capacity of bikes by street. And as you can see here, again, it does another comparison, and it says, hey, okay, based on total availability, total capacity, here's a sort of a scatter plot so you can see what that looks like. And I think this is a helpful visualization, but if I want to change it to, say, a line chart, I just have to go over here and make a click, and now I can see a visualization that's even a little bit easier for me to drill into and take action on. Because if I look here, I can see on this street, I've got a lot of bikes available. On this street, there's no bikes available. So if I was part of the city of Barcelona, I might call my dispatch and say, please move bikes from this kiosk location where there's a lot of bikes over to this one where there aren't very many. And I can do that by just asking a simple question to check availability. So very, very powerful way. Now let's also look at some of the social sentiment. So I can look in here and say, let me look at bikes available versus negative tweets, as an example, by street. And again, Q&A comes up with the visualization that it thinks is most interesting. And you can see here that where there's not many bikes available, there's more negative tweets. And so that correlation that we saw in Excel, we're also able to see here. And let's say I want to drill into this particular location where I've got a lot of negative tweets. And I want to understand that more. So I could say, look at tweets for Rosello by sentiment. And just by typing the question, I can get the tweets by sentiment, and it comes right up. So now as someone in the city planner, I could drill into those tweets and try to understand, hey, is the sentiment really around availability of the bikes, or is it about something entirely different? Very, very powerful tool. To allow your end users, by just simply asking questions, they can get answers back in the form of visualization and drill into your data in really new, rich, and exciting ways. So that's a little demonstration of Power BI. Hopefully that was interesting. And I know you haven't seen stuff like this before because it's really, really very unique in the industry. So cool. So that's Power BI. Hopefully that was interesting. Yeah, good? A little clap. There we go. Okay. Definitely stronger coffee. Just stronger coffee. Okay. So let me keep going, and just wanted to finalize and just talk about the last pillar of the data platform around the hybrid cloud. And again, our goal here is to bring the power of the public cloud to you through the tool you know in SQL Server. specifically the management studio. So how do I make it easy for every SQL Server DBA to interact and create databases, backups, et cetera, in the cloud straight and right from SQL Server? And so we've made a lot of investments in these hybrid solutions. We're making it very easy for you to take advantage of the cloud when you want to, but do it in a very complete and consistent manner. We're not trying to ask SQL Server DBAs to learn new tools or techniques. We want to do this all with an environment that you're familiar with. And so just to describe a customer example of where this can be powerful, I wanted to talk about Flavorous. And Flavorous is a company that helps sells online tickets for various concerts and events. And one of the challenges that they had was they had an on-premises system that scaled okay, but when there was a big concert, like a, I don't know, Lady Gaga or somebody like that, where you had just tens of thousands of people showing up at the website at the same moment to try to buy a ticket, they didn't have the amount of infrastructure in their own environment to scale to meet that demand. And then if they did buy all those servers to meet the demand on premises, then it would remain idle for a huge part of their year. And so it was kind of wasted infrastructure. And so what they did is they took advantage of Windows Azure SQL Database, which is a cloud service in Windows Azure that the SQL Server team built that allows you to really scale up your database needs and scale them back down on demand. And so you can see from the diagram what they've created is a web application that that collects the tickets, that sells the tickets. So it's a web app that sells tickets, you enter your information, and you buy a ticket. And if it's normal demand, it's gonna just process that on-premises, you know, just like it always has. But when we have these really high interest concerts where you have lots and lots of people coming to the website, it actually moves to the cloud to process those ticket requests. So it leverages the fact that you can scale out the cloud to process huge volumes, but it still makes sure that all the transactions remain consistent on-premises. So as they capture the ticket requests, they can process them within their core environment, and they're able to create that scale out. So these are examples of how you can leverage the cloud while still maintaining an on-premises solution. So let me drill into a couple of examples. The first one I want to talk about is backup. And so with SQL Server 2012, you could do this, but with SQL Server 2014, it becomes much, much easier to simply create a backup of your database in blob storage up in Windows Azure. So you can do that right from Management Studio. It really feels like a configuration step, basically. And you can go ahead and back up to blob storage. And this is powerful because, again, if you've got an application running, you've got SQL Server, you just want to create a backup. You don't want to go find another server in your environment. Or if you want some level of redundancy, geo-redundancy, where you want your backups to be stored in a different location than your primary, being able to just do a simple backup up to Azure is powerful. And then those backup files can, if you do have a true disaster in your on-premises environment, those backup files can be restored to a SQL Server virtual machine, so then you can keep running with your application on the cloud. So it's a great way of very low cost backup, yet the ability, because you can spin up a SQL Server in a virtual machine in Windows Azure very, very quickly, you can always restore to that virtual machine in your environment. So a very, very cool way of reducing both capital expenditures and, frankly, operation expenditures by doing backup in the cloud. Now, the next scenario takes advantage of our always-on availability groups, which were part of SQL Server 2012 and now enhanced in 2014, to create more of a disaster recovery, high-availability type solution. And in this picture, what you're seeing here is I've got some SQL Servers as my primary databases. I'm doing an always-on secondary on-premises, so that's kind of a classic high-availability solution. But what I also did is create a second replica up in Windows Azure in a SQL Server virtual machine. So now I can run my backups, my BI reports, I can do all that in the cloud without having to buy new infrastructure. I've got, again, a very closely aligned secondary in the cloud in a different location. So again, if I'm thinking about geo-redundancy, I'm worried about my primary environment having, you know, if there's, you know, some kind of disaster, there's a fire or something like that, I've got that secondary running, and it stays in sync up in the cloud. So this is leveraging the always-on availability groups to create a much more high-performance scenario that has a very, very low return to operations time, more so than just a simple backup to blob storage. So another great scenario, all configurable through SQL Server Management Studio. So you can do that right in the UI. And then, of course, the last scenario, which is an example of my that I used with the customer example with Flavorous, is this ability to create scale out in the cloud with Windows Azure, yet still keep the transactions in sync using the link server feature in SQL Server on premises. And we're seeing more and more examples of this where customers need, you know, they need kind of bursting. They need a lot of capacity for a short period of time. They don't want to build out that infrastructure within their own environment because it's expensive, and then it sits idle. And so they're taking advantage of that burst into Windows Azure for those key scenarios. If I look at some of the examples, and I think you might even be seeing this a little bit later today, but you can see right there from SQL Server Management Studio, the ability to create these backups in these secondary, always-on secondary groups. It's all very configurable right through the UI. We're just making it easy. And like I said before, we're bringing the cloud to you in the tool that you're familiar with, SQL Server and the Management Studio. Now, there's two flavors of the database up in our public cloud that's worth spending a moment or two on. The first is SQL Server in an Azure virtual machine. So this is just classic VM running up in Azure, same as a VM that may run in your own environment in Hyper-V on Windows Server. And it allows you to spin up lots of different flavors. And today, if you go into quick question. How many people have Windows Azure subscriptions? Just a couple. One or two. Okay. So encourage you to take a look at that. You can just sign up for a subscription. It doesn't cost you anything to sign up. You can get a free trial, which we give you about $200 worth of value in that first 30 days. You can start trying this stuff out. What's neat about it is you can go right into Windows Azure, create a gallery, and we call it the gallery image. Create an image of SQL Server. So it's, you know, standard edition, enterprise, different versions, different combinations of SQL with Windows Server. And just in a couple minutes, you have an environment up and running. And what's great about that is it's the SQL Server you know and use every day, but you've been able to create it in a VM, up in the cloud, no hardware required, and you're off and running. And so you can really take advantage of that. And so it's full control over that environment, but it's in a virtual machine. The second flavor is the Windows Azure SQL Database. And this is a platform as a service solution where it's still SQL Server, and you can copy over or migrate and take advantage of it like a regular SQL Server. But you don't have to do things like patching and updating of the underlying operating system or the database itself. So in a platform as a service solution, we take care of the management of the app itself, the management of SQL itself for you, and then you just leverage the database. And so that's one of the core differences there between that SQL and a virtual machine. That's the SQL you know. You focus on SQL, you keep it up to date, you patch it, et cetera. With SQL database in Windows Azure, that's a platform service, and we do that work for you. So there's different options and opportunities to take advantage of as you're thinking about this on-ramp in the cloud. And again, access to both of these solutions is all available through the Management Studio. So very, very cool stuff. And really, it kind of rounds out the complete data platform. So we've made a lot of investments in infrastructure. So this is both Windows Server and Windows Azure as a foundational platform that allows us to run SQL, and specifically taking advantage of the scale, virtualization, security and identity features, and then, as I talked about, like storage spaces to help optimize and scale up your application. And then if you look at this wave for the data platform, we've gone well beyond just the classic relational database. So our partnerships and investments in Hadoop to support unstructured or non-relational data types, both stored in the cloud as well as making it available through one of our partners, Hortonworks, on-premises. For those that are starting to think about Hadoop as capturing of unstructured data and analysis on it, We've got to play there. Of course, analytics has always been a big part of SQL with analysis services. That continues to be an investment area for us. Streaming with Stream Insights is another great technology. Didn't get to talk about it much today, but that's a key area. And then, of course, internal and external. As you saw during my demonstration, as you'll see throughout the day, we're very invested in making it easy for you to connect to data that's outside your environment. So Wikipedia is an example. We've indexed all the Wikipedia tables discoverable through Excel. We've also have some partnerships with Dun & Bradstreet, the World Bank. We're working with many other organizations to make those public data sources easily discoverable from Excel so you can pull it in and do your analysis. Now, of course, once you have that, how do I enrich the data, query over it, focus on you know, cleansing and that whole layer? And so we've got a bunch of investments there. Didn't have time to talk about it this morning in my talk. I think you may see a little bit of that throughout the day, but there's a lot of technologies there. And then certainly the last part of the platform, but by no means the least, is then once I have all this data in our models and environment that's familiar, delivering it to those end users. Because ultimately the goal is allowing every person in an organization who needs to make a decision, make that decision based on data and information. If they can do that, they're going to make much better decisions. So our BI strategy is about making it self-service. It's about putting the data into Excel and allowing you to do the analysis as an end user. It's about putting the data in Power BI and allowing you to use the features like Q&A to ask the data questions, get answers. If I can make it self-service, I eliminate what I often refer to as the BI treadmill. So how many people have experienced this? Business user comes to IT and says, I'd like a revenue report. IT creates the revenue report, hands it back to the business. The business says, this was great, but can I get revenue by product? And then they go back to IT, and the IT brings a new report. And they say, oh, this is good, but can I get revenue by product, by partner type, by channel, by location, by discounting scheme, you know, and it goes on and on. And this back and forth between IT and the business is something we're striving to reduce significantly by, again, if I can put the data in the data model, if I can make it available in tools that are familiar to those business users, they can do the analysis in a self-service way, find the answers that they need, and move on. And that's both richer visualizations in Excel, which you saw a little bit of this morning. It's all about also about new technologies like Q&A. Of course, mobile solutions are a big part of it, and we're delivering mobile applications to help deliver on this. So while you're on the go or using, say, tablets, you can interact with your data. And then we've had some historical investments in predictive analytics. It's certainly an area where we're investing in moving forward. And I look forward to the next time I'm in Hungary to come talk more about that as it becomes available in the future. So that's our data platform. And it's a very rich, complete data platform that looks at all different data types and connects them to the end user. But what's really unique about it is the ability to run this in your environment, on-premises, in the public cloud with Windows Azure, or at a hoster cloud. So because this runs on Windows Server, because it's SQL Server, hosters have tremendous momentum around the world hosting these technologies, and so you have a lot of flexibility in where you run your infrastructure. That's the vision of the Cloud OS, consistency around development, management, identity, the data platform, and of course virtualization, and then delivering SQL Server in that environment is really our key. So that's really all I had for this morning. I really appreciate your attendance. It's great to see so many people here. Thanks for listening. There's a great set of sessions throughout the day that will really drill into more detail around the BI scenarios and hybrid scenarios, etc. If you want to learn more, of course, you can go to Microsoft.com/SQL. Highly encourage you to take a look at SQL Server 2014. The customer technical preview is available. It's fully featured. You can see this in-memory technology in action and see the performance benefits you can get from that. I encourage you to take a look at Power BI and some of these great new BI tools. Very, very interesting and a great way to engage end users. So with that, I'll wrap up. Thanks again for this morning, and I look forward to seeing everybody throughout the day here. We've got a great set of sessions to finish up the day. So thank you very much.